This week on Video Culture, we'll talk Westerns, Rio Bravo, and the original Django.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And thank you for listening to Video Culture. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And what a time it has been. It's been like a month since we've done this podcast, yes. Man.
For those of you who don't quite get how this works, we record these things in advance. And it has been a month since between our last episode and this one.
Well, that's because there's things what we call life, my friend.
I don't have one of those, my friend. So that's strictly a you problem.
Well, that was trying to get my house ready to sell, but you know what? Nobody gives a shit about my personal life, so let's just move on. All right? So let's just get to the
language there, sir.
Hey, all right.
Children might be wanting to know about his spaghetti westerns, man. You gotta watch that.
So, yeah, so I mentioned, this episode is about westerns. So
yes.
We realized in doing all of our shows that all of the, you know, cult movies that we're already on episode number 8. We have not talked about any like kung fu movies, any westerns, any like, yeah. I mean, we touched on sci-fi when we did like The Fly
and yes.
Event Horizon. So this week we thought we would do some really cool westerns.
Yeah. We thought we'd dive into more genre.
Yeah. Know? So the two westerns that we chose is, and you really chose them because you're much more like Western aficionado than I am.
Yeah, I like Westerns a great deal. And these are two great ones. I think they pair really well together in a comparison contrast sort of way. But we decided to do Rio Bravo, the great Howard Hawks movie with John Wayne, and Django. Ryan, shh. Do you hear that? Do you hear that? That's the sound of 1,000 unsubscribe buttons clicking at once.
Nobody wants to hear me. Come on. It's a catchy song.
It is an incredibly catchy song.
You have to sing the song Django. Yeah. It's awesome. Anyway.
We'll get to that. But yes, the theme song for Django is maybe the greatest theme song of all time.
It really is. Like, you turn it, it's so... Like, so 1960s, but it's so completely awesome. All right, so let's just talk about the first movie.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Rio Bravo.
Howard Hawks' Rio Bravo.
So this was filmed in, it was actually filmed in the summer of 1958, but it was released in 1959, and it stars John Wayne, James Dean, and...
Ricky Nelson.
Ricky Nelson. Well, no. Yeah. Dean Martin.
Dean Martin.
I don't know, where do I get James Dean?
Well, Dean, you know.
Dean Martin. Yeah, James Dean Martin. No, just Dean Martin. So, Dean Martin.
You can tell we haven't done this for a month, people, so bear with us.
Blah, blah, blah. And little Ricky Nelson.
Little Ricky Nelson, yeah.
Yeah.
As really a kind of a cold-blooded, like badass kind of guy, you know? Just blowing guys away while singing, you know, rocking 50s tunes.
And he had some swagger for being a little young, little scrawny dude.
He was like 19.
No, he was 18.
He was young, yeah. Yeah, can you imagine that being 18, being the star of a big movie opposite John Wayne, you know? But anyway. So yeah, Dean Martin, and Ricky Nelson, and the great John Wayne.
And this was in John Wayne's sort of like older career. Like he was 52 when when this movie came out.
Yeah,
and
looks every bit of it.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like he played John Wayne.
Yes.
In this movie,
he did. Well, I mean, he was one of those kind of actors where at the time. You know, you kind of were your characters. You didn't have method actors. This was more the time of method acting. You didn't have guys who were getting lost in their characters back in the 50s. You had guys who played basically superstars, you know? I mean, I mean, Dean Martin's great in this movie, but he's still in Ottawa. He is Dean Martin at some points, you know. And Ricky Nelson, I mean, they're playing characters, but still, even at moments, they get to be, you know, Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson.
But, I mean, here's two stars like Dean Martin and John Wayne. I mean, and John Wayne was used to playing, like, the lead role, like, the lead, like, sort of dapper, you know, sort of man or whatever in the movie,
So sort of the quintessential man.
Yeah.
You know, just he was like maleness personified.
Right. So let's just talk about the movie. We'll talk about the plot just like really quickly is that the MacGuffin or like the thing that keeps the movie sort of going. We talk about the MacGuffin a lot. So people that don't, you know, that are not really movie aficionados, it's basically just the part of the plot that like really means something about like what keeps the movie going.
Yeah, it can be anything really. The most famous example most people know of a MacGuffin in films is the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. The briefcase in Pulp Fiction is not really anything. It's just what motivates the plot.
Yeah.
And in Rio Bravo, what motivates the plot is a prisoner.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the movie, you've got you got Dean Martin as a drunk, basically begging for change in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And, this one ruffian basically backhands him, ends up shooting a guy in a bar brawl, and John Wayne arrests this ruffian, takes him to jail.
Yeah.
Well, this ruffian's brother is a rich rancher,
right?
And wants his brother out of jail, so he hires all these guys to basically bust his brother out of jail. And John Wayne, with the help of drunk Dean Martin and whoever else he can get to help him, basically have to basically defend the jail against these criminals who are trying to bust this bad guy out of the jail, basically.
Well, and really, even the murder was just kind of almost a setup to throw him in jail.
Yes.
Because really, he was like the lead sort of henchman bad guy in this town.
That's true.
And they wanted to jail him, but they had to do it on something that really like meant something.
Yes.
And so it was almost like it wasn't like it was set up, but they just had to kind of catch him.
Yeah.
And they just had to run him down, like witness it or whatever it was, and then throw him in jail.
Yeah, basically John Wayne had to actually see it for it to matter.
Yeah, cuz this is the old Wild West. We're talking about he is a sheriff in this little bitty town.
Yeah.
And he's got nobody to help him.
He's got one deputy who's an old drunk with a bad leg.
Right. So that's what we find out in the very beginning.
Yeah.
And then Ricky Nelson shows up and says, "Hey, I'll help you."
Yes, but Ricky Nelson comes in later on with some cattle drivers.
Yeah.
He's not originally there, and he's like, "Hey, I'll help you defend your jail against these bad guys." And John Wayne's like, "I don't really want your help. You know, go do what you're doing. You're too young to get involved in this."
Yeah.
Like John Wayne should. John Wayne's a man. He doesn't need help with his problems.
Well, it was almost like he was protecting him. Like, you don't want part of this life. Like, lead a better life.
Don't be a gunslinger kid. Yeah, it'll get you killed.
Exactly.
But eventually he realizes he needs the help. Because, again, all he's got is his old buddy who helps mine the jail. He's got a bad leg. And he's got Dean Martin, who used to be his deputy, who's now kind of a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be really great.
Right.
And to go back to the movie we've talked about in the past, I really do think that Dean Martin's character was the inspiration for Gene Wilder's character in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, because they had a jail, but then they had to wait for the marshal to show up to, because they're holding a prisoner or whatever.
Yeah.
But, every which way they turn, these other henchmen or whatever are cornering them.
Yeah, it's what they call a siege movie. And then there's lots of siege movies throughout film history. Rio Bravo was kind of the first. We got these characters who are practically trapped in a location. In this case, it's basically this jail and this hotel that's right next to the jail, and they're basically basically outnumbered, outgunned. And you got to think, how are they going to survive? And that's been done a lot throughout films since then. But all those other films have kind of been aping and kind of paying homage to what Rio Bravo did.
Exactly. I mean, and you're definitely more of like a movie historian than me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't even have known that this was one of the first movies of this kind.
Yeah.
I thought it was very, interesting because it's very sort of like slow paced, but it's very, it keeps you sort of entertained because you, you're rooting for them, yeah. you know, and you're rooting for the characters to like, you know, for the marshal to show up or whatever.
Yeah.
But then every so often, you know, just when you get like almost bored to death, they get like locked in a situation yeah. and you're like, how they're going to get out of this? You know?
Well, what makes the film work the best is really the performances of Ricky Nelson, John Wayne, and Dean Martin. I mean, they are so charismatic and so likable in the film. I mean, John Wayne, people to younger movie fans and to younger people in general, John Wayne's kind of a joke, and he shouldn't be. He was wonderful. He only really played one character, but what a character!
Yeah, I mean, you know? He was. He definitely had, even when he was cornered yeah. in the movie, he had such coolness and poise.
Yeah.
And I told you this before when we were sort of talking pre-show,
yeah.
is that I didn't even realize that it was Dean Martin playing the drunk until yeah. like halfway through the movie.
Yeah, he's and mind-blowing in this movie.
I didn't even look up who was in this movie. Just I watched Rio Bravo, John Wayne's in it. Okay, yeah. watch it and it's like... Oh my gosh, it's Dean Martin. I mean, yeah. I knew Ricky Nelson was in it because yeah. he's recognizable
yeah.
right away.
Yeah.
But, and the guy, I mean, but Dean Martin is absolutely incredible. He should have won a freaking like supporting actor, you know, Academy Award yeah. for that movie.
Yeah. Those three performances are the best thing about the movie, but Dean Martin is easily the best of those three performances. He's really the most magnetic in the entire film. He's the most likable. He's the one you care the most about. It's really his movie in a lot of ways.
Well, here's what I was thinking about, okay? And the reason why is not only the way the character is written and the mm-hmm. and the way that the movie's written, but his performance was also great. He almost steals yeah. the show. Almost.
He does. He really does.
Well, part of the reason why is if you look at this movie, and a lot of Westerns are like this, where they're kind of like TV show episodes, right?
Yes.
Where you have everything is sort of the same after the end.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, like when we watch sitcoms or whatever, you know, like there's conflict, but then everything kind of returns to normal at the end of the movie. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the way a lot of Westerns are, really.
Yeah, it's true. Especially Westerns from this time period.
Right, because they want everything to sort of stabilize to equilibrium. And that's kind of the win, because there's really like a bad guy or bad things happen, and then they yeah. have to stabilize. Right?
Well, and also you wanted happy endings for the crowds at the time.
Yeah.
We hadn't gotten to like the cynicism of like the 60s and 70s yet. Yeah.
But the happy ending is just returning to normalcy or yeah. without this bad guy in town or yeah. something like
well,
that.
Well, and basically Dean Martin sobers up, yeah. you know.
Well, that's the thing. John Wayne never goes through any sort of character change
no.
at all. The only character that changes is Dean Martin's character. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's the one who has an arc. You're right. He grows. He becomes a better person.
Yeah.
Dean, I mean, really, John Wayne's almost just kind of this just presence in the film. Like, he's like this moral center.
And let's just say, his name is Dude.
Oh, yeah. Dean Martin's character's name is Dude.
I love that.
Which, I mean, which is probably, that's probably where the name, probably where that word caught on as a phrase in pop culture. But, yeah, I had forgotten his name was just Dude.
Well, I mean, it was a dude... You know, a dude was, it was a term
yes.
back in the days, but a dude was somebody basically from out of town or somebody who was like really sort of aloof, right?
Yeah.
You know what
I believe so, yes.
So that's why he was the dude, because he's just like kind of like the town drunk.
Yeah.
You know, he's just yeah. like a dude, like nobody cares about.
Yeah. And I love how they illustrate in the beginning of the movie that he is so down on his luck as he's begging for change. One of the bad guys flips a coin into a spittoon.
Right.
And, you know, spittoon is what people would spit tobacco into. So it's basically it's a pot full of, like, spit juice and tobacco. They're disgusting. Yeah. And the guy flips the coin in there and laughs. And Dean Martin, legitimately, as the dude literally looks at it, you can tell he's contemplating actually sticking his hand and digging the money out so he can buy a drink. And that's when John Wayne steps in and the plot kind of kicks off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first 4 minutes of the movie, no dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Just the stagecoach coming into town, basically.
Well, I mean, the stagecoach, but yeah. that whole scene, that whole
right.
saloon scene, you know, there's no dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's all just action. It's
yeah.
all just like, what is this guy doing? What is yeah. this guy doing? What is this guy doing? And then after that is when you start meeting all the characters and seeing everything.
And it's really wonderfully staged. I mean, Howard Hawks is a great director. Harry was a great director. I mean, he was probably one of the all time great directors. Mm-hmm. Think about how masterful that scene is. The way they establish all the characters with, like I said, no dialogue really, but you get a sense of who those three characters are: the bad guy John Wayne and Dean Martin's character mm-hmm. as Dude. You understand them all very quickly with no dialogue.
Yeah. Exactly. You know exactly what's going on, and the plot is very clearly established from the very beginning. Like, here's your conflict. Here's what's happening. Now, you know, gather with us as we, prepare for all these things. But it's amazing to me how every single, thing, you're like, how are they going to get out of this predicament?
Yeah.
And then it just, turns around and they get out of it. And you're just wow, that was really lucky.
Yeah.
You know,
like they don't necessarily get by on skill a lot of the time.
It's more of just
luck.
Yeah.
And but let's talk about how this movie feels. If you're used to watching movies made today or in the 90s or 80s, which is really what we've been covering most, this movie is really a shock to the system because the pacing is so different.
It is very slow. It is. I mean, it's a 2-hour movie.
It's 2 hours and 12 minutes.
And even for 1959, that was very long.
Yes.
You know, and it is Technicolor.
Yes.
So it's nice and colorized, which is nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first Western that was colorized.
No, I don't think so.
Because they had color back in the 40s.
We really should research these small technical questions before we start. But thank you for bearing with us, ladies and gentlemen.
I know. But it's still, I mean, it's widescreen. It isn't 4x3. So it's it looks really nice. It feels really nice. It's very slow. There's a couple of weird things that kind of make you a little uneasy, or at least for me watching it from a modern lens.
Okay.
The first thing was John Wayne is 52.
Yes.
And then the actress that was
his romantic interest. Yes.
She was more romantically interested in him than he was in her.
Well, because he was he's all that his man, you know.
I know. She was just oh my gosh. She is just
She's supposed to be 19 or 20?
No, she was supposed to be 21. I mean, in real life, she's 24 in the movie. And it's man, he's old enough to be her dad. This is just weird.
Yeah, it's just a different. Well, I mean, and Hollywood's for years still did stuff like Hollywood still does stuff like that. But it is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, his romantic interest in the movie is a female gambler, and they have a little bit of banter. But she is way younger than he is, and you're right. It is a little icky.
Yeah, and the hotel owner or whatever. What was his name in the movie? As I look it up here on my,
I think it was Mexican stereotype.
It was very Mexican stereotype.
But I believe he was
Carlos. Carlos, the character Carlos,
the Mexican stereotype.
Yeah, very. I mean, and even the Undertaker guy, the Japanese guy.
Oh yeah,
very sort of.
Yeah, not the most racially sensitive of these old movies. You gotta accept them as part as a product of their time period.
Yeah,
you know, there's gonna have a little bit of. It's not nearly as offensive as some of them. I will say that.
No, not in a bit. I did like where they did sort of have this idea of becoming sober and soberness and what Dean Martin was going through and having to endure being an alcoholic and having to put that down so he could.
Yeah.
You know, become himself again. Yeah. I mean,
it's actually handled pretty realistically. He talks about not being able to eat and getting the shakes.
Yeah.
And he talks about having a little bit of beer to try to get him through.
Yeah.
Again, the movie really is about Dean Martin's character as the dude. I mean, he really is the heart and soul of this movie.
Well, and he even almost has a moment where he breaks down and is going to have a drink where he loses his self-confidence, really. You know, where he has a setback, where he almost got taken. He was taken prisoner.
Yeah,
really.
He almost got John Wayne killed. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know he's like, well, I'm useless. I might as well just go back to drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he steps away from that. He comes back and
like any good hero would. Yeah. You know, every hero's got to have that crisis. That's part of the Campbell's hero's journey. Every hero's got to have that crisis of faith and come back stronger.
And I mean, that's a big thing to show in the late 50s.
Yeah,
I mean,
especially because no one really talked about alcoholism in the 1950s.
No. Yeah, very. Very true, very sort of dramatic and realistic. And I think that's what makes, that personal like journey is what makes Dean Martin like so great in that role.
And again, he just nails it at every turn. He's so good in it. But to go back to the feel of the movie, like you're right, the pacing is very different than modern films. Every scene's allowed to have time, and every scene kind of is lackadaisical a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's weird things you would not have in films today, like in the middle of the movie that there is a musical breakdown.
That was another weird part I was going to bring up.
Which is, honestly, it's a very off-putting scene from a technical standpoint, but I love the scene. Let me set the stage. Because it is a siege movie. Yeah. You have all the main characters in the jail basically guarding the prisoner, and they're just stuck there for the night. So what did Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson start doing? Well, let's sing a song.
Well, I mean, a lot of Westerns, that's what they would do. Yeah. I mean, they would play, you know, Tumbleweeds or play a song around the campfire or something like that, well, right? This was their sort of like campfire moment. And why wouldn't you do that when you have a star like Ricky Martin and...
Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson,
Ricky Nelson. And Ricky Martin.
Just imagine him like living the high life.
Let me mix up the names some more.
But again, we haven't done this for a while, guys. Thank you for bearing with us. But you're like, yeah, this is kind of silly and hokey, but they're so talented and charming that it works. And like, I could have had them sing more songs.
Oh man!
But you're right. In a way, Rio Bravo is kind of the bridge between the singing cowboy movies, the black and white singing cowboy movies, and what would later come after Rio Bravo, which I think really would lead us into what we're going to talk about next in a couple minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, but go back to that scene. Yeah. Me and my wife were sitting there watching it, and my wife's like, so they're just going to, like, play a song, like, all this? Yeah. It's just, like, one of those weird, like, sort of moments, and because it is trying to be a little more realistic, but then it's also kind of being a little bit more dreamy. And you talked about before, when we also talked about in the show before, like, yeah, there's guys getting shot. Yes, they died. But there's no blood.
Yeah.
You just see guys like fall over.
Like guys grab their stomachs and fall over, basically.
Not even grab their stomachs. They just fall down. And sometimes they don't even show him falling forward. It's like you see him falling from the back or to the side or something like that. You know, I think in one scene, no, I'm thinking of something else.
It's basically it's all very bloodless. I mean, if the film was released today, it would have a PG rating.
Right.
It's very tame.
Yeah.
Like, you can watch this with your family, and your family will love it. I actually watched most of it with my parents when they were in town a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it's got gunfights in it. It's got some brawling. But it's a very kind of safe movie to show to people.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of changing scenes. There's not a lot of very complicated plots. There's not a lot of – I mean, it's very easy to follow. And even most of the violence is, like, the guy falls over. You may see his body in the background for a second, but then after that, like, they're gone. Like, you don't even think about them anymore.
It doesn't deal with the repercussions of violence at all.
No,
really.
No. I mean, and that's when they did even have a scene, though. I thought it was funny where they had a scene with the Undertaker where he explains it, where he was just like, you know, John Wayne was like, yeah, we'll pay for you for the, you know, burial. And he was like, no, there were like, you know, 35, you know, coins.
I found money in their pockets and that covered it. Yeah,
exactly.
Which is a fun way of dealing with it.
Yeah,
honestly.
It was like, no, I'll take care. I'll just take their bodies.
Yeah, I'll just loot their bodies and bury them with that. You know, he's just sticking
like,
him in a...
almost like they're doing him a favor.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's just throwing him in a hole somewhere and pocketing all the money. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Rio Bravo. Yeah. It is a little slower paced. It is a little old fashioned. But it's a very entertaining movie.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, if you want to nail down, you know, what a 50s Western, you know, sort of was, that is it. You want to see a John Wayne movie in a Western, you know, that's
probably the one to watch. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they don't get much, movies in general don't get much better than Rio Bravo.
No, not at all. So, let's move on to the grittier.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the Django. And we're talking about the 1966 Django. Yeah,
directed by Sergio Corbucci.
Yes, not to Quentin Tarantino Django Unchained.
Well, we'll get into that once we're done talking about Django, but there are a lot of Djangos running around out there.
This was the original that started the original, it off.
Yeah, the original 1966 Django.
So since you're the aficionado, before we start talking about the movie, why don't you explain to everyone what a, that people that don't know, what a spaghetti Western is?
Okay, just a down and dirty explanation of a spaghetti Western. Yep. Westerns are very popular in Italy. Actually, genre movies in general were popular in Italy. And they wanted to make their own. They had their own film genre. They had their own film studios. They liked pulpy movies. They liked westerns. They liked cop movies. They liked barbarian films. And they just made their own. And they kind of clued into westerns because the Italian countryside looks a whole lot like the Old West. So they just started like, well, we like Howard Hawks movies. We want to make our own Howard Hawks movies. But the Italian sensibilities are a little more lurid and a little more sleazy than American sensibilities of the 50s and 60s. So when they made these movies, they were a little bit more violent. They were a little bit more gritty. And it's not because they were intentionally trying to be grittier. They just, that's how their sensibilities worked as filmmakers. They just didn't realize that it was all that different. And that's where the term spaghetti westerns comes from. They're basically westerns made in Italy.
Right.
The most interesting thing about spaghetti westerns to me is that they were all filmed without sound.
Right.
And then dubbed later.
Okay.
So they could be distributed to other countries.
Yeah.
In whatever language that country spoke.
Right.
And in doing that, they could hire actors from all over the world. They could find the best actors they could possibly find and have them acting in scenes together. You'd have a guy who spoke English, a guy who spoke Italian, a guy who spoke German, all acting together. And then it didn't matter. They didn't record the audio.
Right. But the people giving the lines are speaking Italian.
Though. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But they didn't record that at the time. They didn't do what we call sync sound.
So in terms of timeline, when were sort of like the heyday of the spaghetti western?
I would say between 1960 and 1969.
Okay.
Basically the 60s.
Right. And this one is like right in the middle of that, like,
yes.
1966.
Yes.
Okay. So we're talking about, you know, I think it took a little bit longer for the spaghetti western to really catch on in America, right? Yes. It was more like the later 60s.
It wasn't until The Good, the Bad, the Ugly and the Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns where he went, because he was one of those actors that Clint Eastwood was a TV actor that they basically got to go to Italy for a lot of money. And those movies just took off because obviously Eastwood is a star, and it was really apparent once they gave him that chance that he was big. But Django, to me, is kind of the quintessential spaghetti western because it has all the things that are great about spaghetti westerns in it. One, it's directed by one of the better spaghetti western directors, a guy named Sergio Corbucci, who made probably, I think, 10 spaghetti westerns, but they're some of the very best examples of the genre. He did one called Navajo Joe with Burt Reynolds.
Right.
He did another one with Franco Nero called Campaneros, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's just a very good director who just mostly made really kind of grimy, sleazy sort of movies, but not necessarily intentionally sleazy.
Well, this movie Django, and correct me if I'm wrong here, okay, but it seems to me, and just kind of doing the research, this is like, I call it the original Django. Of course, the movie title is just Django because nobody's going to call it the original if it's just like Django. But it seems to me that this movie gets made, right? And then people like sort of fell in love with this Django character and then sort of made their own sort of fan fiction spinoff movies.
Well,
but they were unlicensed. They were not like...
Italy does not have copyright laws like we do.
Right.
So if something is popular in Italy, it immediately got copied.
Right.
And made it other things. Like, there's a whole, we have a whole.
So it's like, it's like if somebody made Rocky and then somebody else like here made like another Rocky movie, but it wasn't like Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, it starred like, it could star like, let me think of another example. It could star like Bruce Willis and they could call it Rocky's Revenge. And
it wouldn't even be associated with the
original
movie.
It would be a boxing movie and over there, the character was called Rocky.
Yeah.
And they would just be okay. we can have a whole episode about Italian knockoff films.
Yeah.
They've got their own version of Aliens.
Okay.
They've got their own version of Terminator 2.
Oh, God.
Italian knockoffs movies. That's a whole no. That's a whole other rabbit hole that we can fall down.
Okay, so but, so let's talk about this movie.
This movie this movie is so cool.
It has so many sort of like dark undertones.
Yeah.
I don't know how to really explain.
Well, let's go.
The plot.
Let's go ahead and start with the way the movie opens. It's got such an iconic opening.
Django.
It starts off with that amazing theme song, which we're going to put on the end of the episode because we have to.
Yes.
But the movie starts, and you immediately know it's an answer to all the squeaky clean westerns of the 50s because you have the character of Django walking through a muddy field.
Right.
Like almost ankle deep in mud, just kind of traipsing along, dragging a coffin behind him.
Yes. For a really long time.
For a really long time.
It's like the first 2 minutes of the movie.
It's like the first 4 minutes of the movie.
It's really long.
Yeah. And he's got a duster on. He's got the cowboy hat pulled low. You can see that he's wearing like Union Civil War soldier pants.
Yep.
But he's just grimy. His boots are caked in mud.
Yeah.
Like it looks miserable.
Right.
But yet he looks very badass and stoic.
Yeah.
But it's so different than like the squeaky clean like old west of like Dude and Ricky Nelson.
Right.
You know, he looks like a guy who could actually exist in the old west.
Right.
And that's Franco Nero basically walking to this town. He finds a town that's basically abandoned except for a whorehouse.
Right.
Where it's got the guy who runs it and basically five prostitutes.
Right.
And he finds out that this town is basically a neutral zone between two warring factions.
Yeah.
A group of Mexican banditos,
right,
and some military people, some former Confederate soldiers, basically,
right,
and they're basically warring with each other over this ghost town. And Django basically runs afoul of them.
Yeah.
You know, he comes into town. He rescues a woman who's being abused by the banditos. The woman was basically involved with both parties, so. She basically draws the conflict back into this ghost town, and Django's sort of caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's almost like he's passing through, but he says to the girl when he rescues her in a very sort of like heroic way, just all of a sudden just shoots everybody down. But because she's like tied up or whatever. And he says, well, I could take you into town. I've got some business to attend to.
Yeah. Well, you find out later on that he was from this town.
Yeah.
So, you know, spoiler alert. Sorry, guys. We haven't seen it yet. We're going to talk about spoilers for this to make sense. He used to be from this town. His wife was murdered by the military leader.
Right.
So that's why he's basically back in town.
So, and then he, you know, hears about the Mexicans. He hears about the, you know, the guy that runs the show,
The proprietor of the House of Ill Repute.
He's, you know, whatever, yes. he informs him, like, the Mexicans come through. General Jackson, you know, comes through, whatever.
Yeah.
They kind of run the show. Yeah. And so, you know, he's like, please don't do anything. Please don't upset anything that's going on. You're going to get yourself killed. Like, don't get into trouble. Like, don't make it, you know, trouble for me.
And not 2 minutes goes by, but the military shows up, and Django, of course, starts all kinds of, you know, trouble with them.
Exactly.
He shoots a couple of them.
Yes.
And they end up running off. And Django's like, before you go, next time bring 50 men with you.
Well, no. We have to tell the secret.
Yeah.
So the coffin. What does he say is in the coffin the first time?
He goes. What's in the coffin? This is before you knew his name.
Yeah.
He goes, so one of the prostitutes asked him, what's in your coffin? He goes, that's Django. Django's in that coffin.
That's right. He calls the gun Django.
Well,
but then we find out because the guy comes in and he gets sort of challenged. He gets sort of cornered because he's challenging the general or whatever. And then so he just like ducks behind.
He basically calls the general. So he's like, He defeats the military guys in the bar at the moment, and the guy they're starting to run away, and he's like, I'll tell you what, come back with more men next time. Bring all of them. And it gets to this amazing scene of Django sitting in the muddy street, just sitting on a log that's fallen over with his feet up on the coffin. It's an amazing shot. It looks so cool. And you see, like, the military coming in, and Django just kind of immediately jumps down behind the tree he was sitting on, and he's just looking over the tree. And the minute they all get into view, he pops up in the coffin, and what does he pull out? A Gatling gun.
Big Gatling gun. And you have to realize that, you know, this is from, you get the sense that this was sometime, like, just after the Civil War.
Yes.
So we're talking about, you know, late 1860s sometime, right?
Yeah.
But he's got a Gatling gun, and he's not afraid to use it of mowing people down.
Yeah, and it becomes like a Rambo movie suddenly for him. Like a not really that violent of Rambo movie, but he basically pulls out this gun and just mows down all like 60 of these guys. They don't know. They've never even seen one of these things before. it's really kind of a fist-pumping moment when you see when you pull out this huge cannon out of this coffin. It's so cool.
You know, and what's funny is that when I saw that, the first thing that came to my mind was watching the movie El Mariachi, and where the machine guns were like in the guitar cases.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that's where Robert Rodriguez got the inspiration for this.
There are no new ideas. And we'll talk about the other influence of Django towards the end and Rio Bravo.
Right.
But yeah, two very influential movies.
Yeah.
So basically, he mows down the entire military force, pretty much. And I will point out, this is like only 25 minutes into the movie. I mean, like any other movie, this would have been like the heroic climax.
Right.
But no, this is like right at the beginning.
See, but okay, so where it leads after that is what I don't really understand. And maybe you can help understand. It's like the Mexican, then the Mexican crew comes in.
Yeah.
He kind of befriends the leader of the Mexican banditos.
Well, they imply that they knew each other beforehand because he knows Django from the past. He's like, oh, my friend Django, remember, you've saved my life before. You know, they have that kind of like scoundrel hug, like you thieving dog or whatever, and they hug.
And then he's like, I've got a plan, but I need your help.
He's like, check out my Gatling gun. Do you guys want a Gatling gun? I can get you 10.
Yeah.
And he's got a plan where he can steal money to buy Gatling guns. And so basically what they do is they go, and we're not going to spend too much time recapping the plot, but they go and rob the remaining military force of all their gold using the Gatling gun and the Mexican Benito's forces. And Jacob's plan apparently the entire time was not to give these Mexican guys guns, but was to steal to use them to steal this gold and then take off.
Yeah.
So basically... what happens is they steal the gold from the army. Then Django basically grabs the gold and tries to escape, and things don't go well for him at that point when he tries to escape.
Well, I don't know where to, I mean, I'm trying to think. There's so many things. It's like the movie has its own sort of plot line.
Yeah.
The thing that really I don't understand is like when you see Django and you see these things like happen, like he rescues the girl, right? Yeah. He's playing like he treats all the women well, and he gets mad when the other people, like his, you know, his character is treating the women bad, right? Yeah. Especially this other girl that he's sort of like rescued or whatnot.
Yeah, the girl he rescued.
So you realize that, like, okay, does this guy have some morals? Is he like the savior? Is he like the guy that we're trying to root for? Yeah. Is he like a good guy?
Yeah.
But then after that, you're like, he's a good guy, but then he's like stealing gold and like he's killing all these people, but we don't know why he's killing all these other people for his own reasons or for not his own reasons.
And I think it's meant to be a little bit morally vague. I think that's, again, that's the difference between these movies and like the earlier American 1950s Westerns, is they're morally ambiguous in a way. Like Django can be a noble character when it comes to women, but he can also be selfish where he wants to be rich.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's almost kind of an anti-hero in that sort of thing. Because you're rooting for him the whole time, you know, right? He's this really sort of quiet, you know, guy. But he has this, like, you know, he has this power, you know, and he's...
He has this quiet intensity about him.
But he always seemed to me, through the whole movie, he always seemed to be, like, two or three steps ahead of everybody else. Yeah. Like, he had this master plan in mind, like, the whole time.
Yeah.
But then... At the end, and this is what I don't understand. So he steals the gold, right?
Yes.
He gets away with the girl because the girl says, you know, holds him up. She finds out.
I'm coming with you.
I'm coming with you. He's like, okay, fine.
He's like, fine.
Just go ahead.
Jump in the wagon. Let's go.
Jump in the wagon. Let's go. So then they go, but then they fall off the horse and then the gold falls in the.
Yeah, there's a bridge going out of town that goes over like a quicksand pit. And basically, the girl's gun goes off, startling the horses buck, the coffin with the gold in it falls off the bridge, lands in the quicksand, and Django, needing the money for whatever reason, dives in to try to pull it out of the quicksand, so he's drowning in quicksand, the girl's trying to save him, and at that moment, the banditos that they robbed catch up with him.
But, okay, first off, let me say two things. As much as I saw Quicksand as a kid, I thought it was going to be a bigger problem as I became an adult. That came from a meme. I didn't know.
Well, no, I mean, that,
the, yeah. And then the second thing is, the whole time, you know, Django's sort of like ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
And then this is one time where you're just like, really, this is the first time where you're just like, really worried for him.
Yeah, like he...
Because you're like, wait, he's in real trouble this time. Yeah. Well, it isn't just like, oh, he's got the gun, oh, he's going to get away.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, crap. Like, this is bad.
Yeah. It's also his first major setback. Like, everything doesn't seem to go according to his plan.
Yeah.
And let's do a little aside for what you said. I don't think there was a lot of quicksand in the Old West. I think
I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Italians got that wrong about American geography.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure where there even is quicksand in the world, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't in like New Mexico.
No.
You know, it's kind of ridiculous, yeah. but it's a cool image because the Mexicans end up shooting the girl. They rescue Django, and you think it's going to be okay, but then they brutalize Django and bust up his hands.
Right,
and they leave him for dead. And I don't think we should spoil the ending. I think we should let the ending go unspoken.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people have not seen this movie.
Okay. So we're not going to spoil the ending of this
I don't movie? Think we should.
Okay.
Because I would like people to see this movie. What do you think?
I think it makes the whole movie. I will say this. It has, you know, it has a pretty good ending, but it's also one of those endings that kind of leaves you, you know, kind of still kind of like... A knot in the pit of your stomach, sort of.
Oh, it's not a happy ending.
No, it's kind of like a okay. You know, it's kind of like an even.
Yeah, but it's kind of like. But it is a cool ending. And that final shot is really cool, and I want people to experience that because I think it's some great iconic imagery.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take that away from people.
I mean, as much as people like the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah,
I think this tops that.
You think that's a bold statement. I'm glad you like that. I know I was hesitant to recommend it to you, but I love these kind of morally ambiguous, grimy spaghetti westerns.
Yeah,
and Franco Nero, which we haven't brought up, that Django is played by a guy named Franco Nero. Franco Nero is super cool.
Yeah,
like he's got this presence about him. He's got these piercing blue eyes.
Yeah, those ice blue eyes and like this really tight. You know, face, you know. Yeah.
He's got like this superhero, like, jawline.
Yeah, he does. Like, really squared off jaw. And
he looks great in, like a cowboy hat pulled low in a duster.
I mean,
like, he was made for Westerns.
So mysterious looking. Yeah. So mysterious. Yeah. It's so great. So great.
And he's, I mean, even, we watched the dub version, even dubbed in, even badly dubbed in English, still just so cool.
Whoever dubbed him did a really good job, I thought.
Yeah. I'm a little iffy on dubbing. I mean, if you can see it in the original Italian and you don't mind subtitles, that's what I recommend because Nero does his own voice in the Italian version, and it works better.
Okay,
but if you don't mind subtitles,
because
there's no true original audio track for these movies.
I will say it is a little weird watching it when you first watch it with English dub.
Yeah.
But you get used to it after about 20 minutes.
You do. Yeah. You're like your mind just adjusts to it.
No, and what's funny about it is that I didn't mention this in the pre-show because I wanted to talk about it on the show, is that when I did watch it like that, I wound up watching the actor's eyes and their face more than I watched their mouth, which is very interesting.
Well, and that's – if you go back and – it's funny because, you know, Sergei Leone, who did Good, the Bad, the Ugly, was really big on shooting, like, eyes and, like – extreme close up of a face because that's to me where a lot of the really interesting Italian acting comes from is like from the nose up, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing I found, let's switch gears for a second. One thing I find really interesting about Django, it does not follow a traditional plot structure whatsoever.
No, and the weird thing about it, and the weird thing about any of these movies, and I don't know if the other spaghetti westerns are like this. But, and I know sort of El Mariachi was kind of like this, is that you don't really know what the MacGuffin is.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're a fly on the wall, kind of like that show Kung Fu, where you don't know what's going to happen. You're just following along this guy, seeing what the heck is going on.
Yeah, you don't have preconceived notions. Like when you watch a lot of modern films, you're like, oh, well, this is an action movie. I know what's going to happen. Or this is a superhero movie. Or this is a murder mystery. I kind of... Yeah. Know the structure of these, like Django doesn't have any of that.
No, and you don't know where the real sort of like reward is. I mean, is the reward this or that or that? Yeah. I mean, what?
Yeah, you actually don't even really know the point of the story until it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
And to me, I find that refreshing and exciting about it.
Yeah, because you're just following this guy who's coming into town, who's like, there's some warring factions going on between these, you know, leftover Confederate soldiers and these Mexican banditos. And
what a great word, like, banditos. Banditos. I always like the words for banditos.
Banditos.
But yeah, such a, I just think it's such a fun movie. It's full of cool, like, it's full of cool imagery.
Yeah.
And
it is full of cool shit. I'll finish that for you.
Let's not again language. We're gonna get the bleep button out a lot for this one, folks.
No.
But
only if there's the F bomb. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
No, completely enjoyable. It is dark and it is gritty, and it is. I think it follows. If anybody is a fan of those, like, you know, like we mentioned, Pulp Fiction, El Mariachi, like any of those, like, sort of dark, you know, those darker undertone, like, sort of movies.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to go back to the comparisons with Rio Bravo, this movie does have a little bit of guys getting shot and just falling over, but occasionally there's some really graphic violence for the time that happens.
Right.
You see a guy gets shot in the eye and suddenly his eye is like pouring like red paint blood.
Right.
Like blood back then was just really bright red paint.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where a guy gets his ear cut off and
it's not
shown graphically, but again it's got bright red paint.
Well, I mean, even the way that Django's hands get
his hands get bashed up. And it basically look like they dip his hands in red paint. And it's just it's not that it's super violent, but when you compare it to like the cleanliness of Rio Bravo, it's really surprising to see in just 7 years how much more violent Westerns had become.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I will say that these are, like you said, they were becoming this, but they weren't made in America. These are not American Westerns. They are made in Italy with a different sort of culture.
It was a different sensibility. Yeah. And then later, they started, when those got to America, they started influencing directors after that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it gets into like Sam Peckinpah and stuff like that, who made American Westerns and things like that. But yeah, just the violence, the difference in the violence to me is so stark in between the two movies.
But, and also, I think to me too, not only like the amount, but also how in Rio Bravo, in the first 4 minutes, you understand how the rest of the film's going to go. Django, you're like, what is happening?
Well, and also you clearly understand who the characters are.
Yeah.
You're like, you're easily more than halfway through Django before you really get where Django's coming from.
Exactly.
And that's a totally different experience.
And you don't even really get to understand his motivations until the very end.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Which is really the old chestnut of revenge.
Exactly.
Which is what almost any good Western is about. let's talk for a minute about these movies, just in general, you and me. I had to kind of talk you into watching these. So are you glad you watched them?
Oh, I'm ecstatic. I was ecstatic to watch them. I mean, really, to be quite honest, my personal like stuff, because of the everything that was going on, I was going to watch them. But it's not like if there's a Western on, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not like I'm really drawn to them.
Yeah.
But when I do watch them, I'm like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really, you know, awesome movie. But I think it's also because of there is violence, there is people getting shot, there is, you know, even in Rio Bravo, I mean, there's darkness and grittiness and all this other kind of stuff. You know, it's not like a drama where we're going to learn about, you know, life or something like that. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about some, you know, vagabond characters and, you know, a sheriff and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll talk about my own experience when it came to growing to like Westerns. I didn't like Westerns my entire life. When I thought about Westerns when I was a kid, I always thought about like Roy Rogers singing with like fringe on his shirt.
Or the Lone Ranger.
Or the Lone Ranger. And I always thought it was hokey and silly. It wasn't until I became a film fan and wanted to learn more about movies, I said, well, I'm going to watch some Westerns and try to figure out what Westerns are about. And just not even really thinking about it, I ended up picking up spaghetti Westerns without even realizing what they were. I'm like, these are cool. They're gritty, they're violent, they're interesting. And but with that I went and discovered like Howard Hawks and John Ford, and I'm like, okay, these are actually good. But you have to be willing to seek them out to give them that chance.
But it's kind of like war movies, you know?
Yeah.
Cuz they are more of that sort of like theme, I guess you would say. Yeah. You know, they're not dramas, or they're not going to be about feelings. You know, they're going to be about macho men.
Yeah, and I'll be interested when we finally get to war movies. That's going to be quite interesting, trying to pick out a couple war movies.
Well, to show my ignorance about movies, you know, when I first heard the term spaghetti Western, like, you know, many moons ago,
yeah.
I thought, oh, you mean like, you know, I was thinking about like, you know, how they do kind of like the script with like the lasso and make it look like a spaghetti.
Is that what you thought
like
it was? Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I was thinking they were like singing cowboy movies and no.
No, nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah. Yeah. It just makes me imagine like an old lady thinking she's going to watch like Roy Rogers, you know, sing like the Tumbling Tumbleweeds. Yeah. And then it's just Franco Nero just like slitting a guy's throat with a Bowie knife. You know?
Oh, the spaghetti Western singing cowboy movie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the. I mean, there's a lot of information about these movies. I mean, mostly because Rio Bravo is held in such high regard.
It's probably the most well regarded movie that we've watched so far, right?
Yeah, it is. And and Django is probably one of the most highly regarded spaghetti Westerns.
Yes.
So, what do you want to start with, Rio Bravo?
Let's start with Rio Bravo.
Okay, so Rio Bravo, it was shot in the old Tucson studios in the summer of 1958. The set was built to 1/7 scale to make the performers look larger than life.
They were built slightly smaller.
Yeah.
Enrique Nelson must be a tiny, tiny man.
He is a tiny man.
Because he looked really small.
He did, but still, I mean, John Wayne and, I mean, and Dean Martin isn't, like that,
yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Like
he's not, yeah.
Yeah. So, but yes, they wanted to make him look like really large. So they, hit the mic. But yes, the town, the buildings were made a little bit smaller.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So they played a little movie, sort of magic, and really, it all takes in the like the main street of a town. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, that's always a great shot in any sort of Western. Is that you know. Because you get that like nice, that great perspective.
Yes.
The last movie in which John Wayne wore the same hat that he wore was in Stagecoach in 1939.
Huh.
Yeah. So he didn't wear that type of hat. He wore like a bigger hat in like some of the other movies, I guess. So yeah, it wasn't. That was a thing. Howard Hawks, the director, he always wanted someone who could connect with teenagers to play Colorado, which was Ricky Nelson's character. Reportedly, his first choice was Elvis Presley.
And to put that in perspective for you, that'd be like casting Justin Bieber in it nowadays.
Yeah.
If they're making a Western nowadays, if they put Bieber in it, that'd be what
instead
that was.
Instead of Zac Efron.
Yes.
So, but Presley's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, wanted too much money and top billing. So it wouldn't have mattered anyway because, you know, Presley joined the army like 2 months before filming.
You know, Elvis probably would have been good in this because he had that kind of coolness about him when he was young. He might have been good.
But, yeah, Tom Parker was like, no, if he's going to be in the movie, he's going to be top billing.
Yeah.
And then it didn't matter because like 2 months before they started filming, he joins the army. And then, I mean, and then when he comes back out of the army, like, what does he do? He does all those movies where he has top billing anyway, right?
Like Clam Bake and all that nonsense.
So Howard Hawks did not want to cast Ricky Nelson at first because he was too young and too lightweight.
He is really small.
Yes. And Howard Hawks deliberately gave him the fewest number of lines. But he admitted that having Nelson on the name and the poster and all that like helped like sales and helped the post at the box office.
It makes me because just to show you Hollywood has not changed that much in 60 years.
Right, like you put put those guys on there, they will
put the young hot star on there. People will go see it.
Right,
you know.
Ricky, let's see, Ricky Nelson. Here's how I know he was 18. He celebrated his 18th birthday on the set, like 2 weeks into shooting. And so as a gift, or really as a rite of passage, John Wayne and Dean Martin gave him a 300-pound sack of steer manure, which they threw in, they threw him into.
It sounds kind of lighthearted when you read it, but that's probably pretty mean.
Could you get away with that these days?
Dean Martin was probably drunk at the time, so.
Oh, well, I mean, he played a drunk. I don't think he really drank that much.
Was that his stick? He really did that character quite a bit. So.
Yeah, I don't think he really drank that much in real life. And let's see. After seeing the film, But yeah, could you get away with that today?
No.
Yeah, somebody might get sued.
You can't throw Brad Pitt into a big pile of crap. You can't do that. No. Yeah.
After seeing the film Gary Cooper, which tell everybody who Gary Cooper is.
I'm not the biggest Gary Cooper fan, so.
Well, I mean,
you call me one of my blind spots there, Ryan.
You're not a big Gary Cooper fan?
I'm not a big Gary Cooper fan.
Well, he did the Western High Noon.
He did High Noon, yes, okay. He did. Which John Wayne is infamously not a fan of.
Well, Gary Cooper criticized Rio Bravo, saying it was so phony, nobody believes it. But this film, Rio Bravo, is considered to be a response to High Noon.
That's true, because John Wayne thought that the movie was taught bad morals,
yeah.
And it was irresponsible to show a man be that cowardly in that position of power. But we're not going to get too much into what High Noon's about. But yeah, John Wayne was not a fan.
No, tell a little bit about what High Noon is about. I mean,
High Noon is about a sheriff who's got to have a showdown with a criminal at noon. High Noon.
Right.
And he's afraid and basically tries to get out of it and tries to get help throughout the entire movie.
Oh, right. And then
shown as weak and cowardly through most of the film. This is the sheriff, the kind of the protagonist of the film played by Gary Cooper.
Yeah.
And John Wayne was not a fan of that.
No, he wanted to show the sheriff as this, guy who had control of things.
Yeah. And John Wayne actually helped run the writer of High Noon out of Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that was like McCarthy, is it? Like during McCarthy?
They accused him of being a communist. Yeah, it's not one of the nicer stories about Hollywood. I guess I do know more about Gary Cooper and High Noon than I thought I did.
You're just not a fan. You don't want to talk about
it. You caught me off guard, Ryan. You caught me off guard.
It's because I feel some anger. I feel like you just don't want to talk about him. And that's fine. But, I mean, I think it has to be mentioned in this film.
Well,
because I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, even John Wayne like signed up to do this type of movie because he wasn't doing these type of roles. But I think that he was like, no, let's show him how it's done. Like he's like, you know, talk to, Howard Hanks. And he's like, let's make it, let's make this.
And it is kind of funny to think like Gary Cooper sitting in an audience or being like, that's a bunch of horse shit. that's an amusing thought to me. That's a really amusing thought.
Yeah, all right. Dean Martin approached, Howard Hawks to consider him for the role to play the dude. Hawks was kind of reluctant at first and wanted to meet with him, but like to meet with him like at 9:30 like the next morning. So, but when Hawks learned that like Martin played a show in Las Vegas until midnight and then got on like a red eye basically to like go meet him, he was just like, oh, well, shoot, you want it this bad, you got it.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
That was a great decision.
I know. But yeah, like no real audition, no nothing. Just
old Hollywood, man.
I know.
These guys are super cool.
And then also, I don't think I have it in my notes, but I remember reading that, or maybe I do. No, I don't. No, I don't have it. He, Dean Martin, got inspiration from like Marlon Brando.
Oh really?
On how to play the part.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember reading something about he had the hardest time like crying because in the scene where at the stables where he gets like
he gets captured
and then John Wayne comes in who plays his real name is John but in the thing they call him like John or Chance because his name is John T. Chance.
Yeah, John T. Chance. Yeah.
What a
great name. We talked about that earlier. I mean, it's not as good as Noodles McIntosh, but it's a little bit of a callback to our UHF episode.
Yeah, but no, somebody else used John T. Chance as a pseudonym for something.
I'm pretty sure it's been in an action movie here.
Somebody is using it somewhere. I guarantee you. But no, Chance like rescues him at the stagecoach and Dean Martin kind of has a breakdown.
Because he's really the most interesting character in that film for sure.
Yeah. So to tell how like popular this movie is, you can see the rifle used that John Wayne used and the hat and the shotgun used by Walter Brennan are on display at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum.
That's pretty cool.
Walter Brennan just played like a. We never talked about
Walter
him.
Brennan. He's kind of the old coot who he's the old deputy who helps guard the prisoner in the jail.
He plays such a great character.
He's
actor,
comic
though.
Relief, and he's great in it. Yeah,
he is the character actor among character actors, my friend.
He's basically the classic Dag Nabbit kind of guy. He is. He's so good in
but,
it.
But you know, me and my wife were watching him and thinking we've seen him in other movies. Yeah. I looked up his filmography and I'm like, I haven't seen any of these movies. But he's just that character is just so
iconic.
So common. All right. So this Rio Bravo was selected by the Library of Congress for preservation in the National Film Registry in 2014.
Yeah, as it should be. It is almost the quintessential, you know, 1960s Western. It's
so it is American as America, basically.
It really is.
So the themes, the song My Rifle, My Pony and Me, which is the song that Ricky Nielsen and Dean Martin
such
sing
a good
together,
song, yeah.
Was adapted from the song called Settle Down, the theme from Red River, which was another John Wayne and Howard Hawks movie. Yeah. And by its original author, Dmitri Timokhin. Or Timokhin. I don't know how to... Dmitri... I don't know. I just messed up people's names.
It's all right. We're not going to try with all the Italians in Django.
Sorry, so. Dmitri. In the UK... Okay, we're talking about how, like, kind of slow this movie is, right? In the UK, Rio Bravo was not even originally even reviewed for Sight and Sound. It wasn't until August of 1976 that Leslie Halliwell gave the film 2 out of 4 stars, describing it as a, quote, cheerfully overlong and slow-moving Western, unquote, that was nevertheless, quote, very watchable for those with time to spare.
See, you know, critics aren't, like I said, I'm a film journalist, I'm a critic, we're not always right, and that's definitely, while I can see why they feel that way, that's not correct.
Well, that was in 1976.
Yeah.
Today, 100% Rotten Tomatoes rating.
It is considered one of the best movies. It's considered one of the greatest films of all time.
And now, in 2012, Sight and Sound, that same magazine who published that, in the critics poll, it is, it's the second highest ranking Western in the greatest films of all time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned the first Western is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
No. The Searchers.
Oh, of course. Searchers is really good, yeah. If you want to watch another like classic American Western, yeah. Searchers is one I highly recommend.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, everything that I saw about it looked really cool.
Yeah.
And that one was made in, like, 1957, I think?
Yeah.
It was made in the late 50s as well. All right, so I've got one more factoid.
Okay.
About...
He's pointing at me dramatically, folks.
At Rio Bravo, but I'm going to save it for last.
Okay.
Because this is like my closing arguments.
Okay.
It's so good. You will love it. All right. So Django.
Django.
Do we have to sing it?
Like, I think I have to.
It's one of us does.
It's like Tourette's, you know.
The title is it really is, and for those like wondering, it really is truly a reference to the renowned jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt, who had a crippled hand. Django Reinhardt's left hand was deformed. Like
I did not know that. That's
his like his pinky and his ring finger were kind of like fused together.
Oh.
And so yeah, he only played with basically like 3 fingers. But you have to realize Django Reinhardt that is. A lot of his stuff are like, you know, kind of single note runs.
Yeah.
So he really had to, his talent is all like in his right hand,
yeah.
You know, the way he picks, the way he did it. So, but yes, just know that he did it with like 3 fingers or whatever.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's really interesting. Yeah. That's where I came from. A little piece of trivia I think is interesting about Django is we're talking about all the ripoffs. There have been easily 30 plus Django ripoff movies made in Italy.
Hundreds of unofficial sequels I have.
There was only one official Django sequel, and it came out in 1987. I think it's called Django Strikes Again.
Right.
I believe it stars Franco Nero. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
But I know it came out in 87, which is a good... That's a long time after the original.
It says here, my notes say here, that the film was so popular in Germany that almost every Franco Nero Western there bears the name Django.
And that's still common. Like, if you buy like a budget pack of like spaghetti Western, if you buy like the 15 movie spaghetti Western budget pack at like Walmart, there'll right. be Django movies on there, and none of them will have anything to do with the movie we watched.
Well,
today.
And let's just talk briefly about Django Unchained, because this, I mean, Django Unchained was inspired also by this movie, yes. So it's almost Quentin Tarantino's kind of riff on the whole
it is,
thing.
And that's why it's called Django Unchained. He loved it because it's an homage to that idea of this is his Django ripoff film. And the movie even starts, like, the reason people are going to know the song we're talking about is because Tarantino took the song from Django and put it in as the title track for Django Unchained. So when we've been talking about Django, people we work with in our day jobs, oh, they're like, oh, I love that movie. I love that theme song. Or they start singing this theme from Django. They have no idea it's from a movie from 1966.
No.
They think it's a movie that's from Django Unchained. Yeah. And as a movie nerd, that drives me nuts.
Well, even when we're telling other people in our office, like, what movies that were, oh, like, oh, what?
Like, oh,
what
I love Jamie Foxx.
Oh, yeah, like, Django. Oh, yeah, Django Unchained. Like, no.
No.
No. We're not saying Django as a short for Django Unchained. We're saying Django.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Major's men wore like red scarves over their faces. Remember the yeah. like, so apparently you're going to love this. Mm. They basically wore that over their face to hide their face, because so many extras were otherwise employed either on other pictures in the area at the time, or that the director thought that they were the only ugliest ones or deemed not menacing enough.
that's amazing.
So to make them a little more menacing, they wore this, like,
let's put you in this mask.
Let's put you in this like ski mask.
You'll look tough. To go back to Django Unchained for just one second. Okay. I want to tell you one piece of trivia that I wanted to let you know. Django Unchained was not only inspired by Django, but you know there's a Rio Bravo reference in Django Unchained. When Jamie Foxx's character gets his real clothes, he gets to buy his own outfit, and he gets to wear a nice cowboy clothes for once. Who is he dressed like? The dude from Rio Bravo.
Oh yeah, well
he's got the green jacket. That has the same kind of hat. Oh. Same kind of pants.
Oh yeah, like when he gets cleaned up or whatever. Like when he gets a shave and like all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Like he's dressed like Dean Martin from Rio Bravo, and it is purely that costume from Rio Bravo.
Well, my last factoid is a tie-in to Rio Bravo, okay. So just hold on. All right. There was a Django received an 18 certificate. Those of you who don't know, like over in Europe and a lot of other countries, when they say like 18, it means that 18 audiences only. So this would be the equivalent here of like an NC-18.
Yes.
Which means not even by parents' permission can you get in to see this movie.
Yes. At the time, it was considered shockingly violent.
Right. And it's stated that the director forgot to cut out the ear-severing scene when Italian censors requested he remove it. So I think that, and it says forgot in like quotation marks.
Yeah.
Meaning he was like, told the censors, oh yeah, I'm going to take that out. Oh,
it
yeah,
is.
And then he just kind of leaves it in.
Yeah.
Like,
even though even though it's hokey by today's standards, it's pretty, I mean, it's violent. Right. And it seems almost needlessly violent in a way.
But yeah, but it was like, it's sort of implied here that the director didn't like, really want to.
I'm going to leave it in. It's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a limited release in L.A., in 1967, hosted by Nero himself.
Yeah.
So, but even Jack Nicholson tried to buy the rights to the film.
Huh. See, I think he maybe wanted to be in a remake of it. Can you imagine, like, young Jack Nicholson trying to do an American version of Django?
I don't know what his motivations were. Whether he's thinking that he's going to do it, or whether this film needs to be seen, or
it's hard to know. Yeah.
Whether he thought that Hollywood wouldn't really pick it up and do anything with it, so he was going to. I don't know. I do know it didn't. Django didn't find a legitimate distributor in the U.S. until 1972, and it was released in an edited form by Jack Vaughn Productions as Django with a J.
Yes. because, you know, because Americans don't understand subtlety.
Yeah, they want to say the Django, and it's,
which actually they make a joke about that in Django Unchained.
All right, so the graphic, I've never seen Django Unchained, by the way.
It's, you know, it's Tarantino, man. Yeah. They're okay.
The graphic.
Now nerds are gonna hate me because I said Tarantino is just okay.
So I mean, but it was so violent, like I said before, the 18 rating, but it was banned in several countries, and it was rejected by the UK. Like, they wouldn't even show it in the UK. Yeah, they wouldn't even give it an 18 rating in the UK. They said, no, we're not going to distribute your movie, up until 1983 when it finally came out on video.
UK had weird editing standards that we could get into. Like, for the longest time, you couldn't show headbutts in UK films. Like, there's even a headbutt in, like, Star Wars Episode II. It's cut out. Wow. You couldn't show nunchucks.
What?
We probably shoot for like a Bruce Lee episode to talk about this. For the longest time in British films, you couldn't show nunchucks because they were considered an illegal street weapon that you couldn't have in Britain. So they didn't want to glorify them in films.
Or maybe like a switchblade or something like that.
But think about how silly that is. No nunchucks. It made Bruce Lee movies terrible in the UK.
Well, I mean, it is sort of like the British to be more rejection of violence over like sexual overtones or stuff like that. I mean, you know, Americans talk all the time like, well, they just show boobs on TV. Yeah. Well, like Monty Python did, because it was, it was almost kind of like they would do it for a cheap joke, you know, or whatever. But yes, they are, you know, not as afraid, I would say, of showing a boob or something.
Yeah, or something that's a little bit sexual. But heaven forbid you throw a headbutt in there. Like, that's just right out.
No violence whatsoever at all. The film was commercially successful. So it says it earned like $1 billion lira or something like that.
It's probably what, $40?
No. It was like
A joke to any of our international listeners, if we have any. I'm just kidding.
No, it was like 1 billion lira. So that's like 1.6 million U.S. dollars in 1967 or something like
that. Well, I mean, I guess a billion in your home country—that's pretty amazing.
Man, that's. I mean,
you got to understand, Franco Nero became a huge star in Italy.
Right.
He became such a big star in that country. He became sort of a star here in America.
Right.
You know.
So yeah, I mean, it's like the Star Wars of, you know, spaghetti western.
It is. I mean, it kind of defined that genre like for a while.
George Lucas of the So yeah, I mean, it was very commercially successful. So if you want to know the body count,
I'm curious.
180.
Wow.
Including 79 kills from Franco Nero, 7 from Eduardo Forjado, which is the Mexican bandito, 5 from Jose Baldado, and 2 from...
It was Moreno. A second in command, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, 180.
Well, yeah, Django tears some guys up with his Gatling gun. He really does.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why they have to have so many actors in the thing. I mean, you can't have, like, 180 extras. Yeah. You know, come on. So, it has a 92% score on Rotten Tomatoes.
I really like this movie. I mean, it's one of the movies that, if anyone's interested in Westerns, I always recommend the original Django to them.
There wasn't a whole lot of, critics, like, information that I found on it at the time. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because it's one of these just, like, gritty, you know, underground movies, you know?
They were considered, like, drive-in movies or, like, grindhouse movies. I mean, they paired them with, like, other cheap stuff.
Yeah.
Like respectable critics in America didn't go see these movies.
No, there wouldn't be critics that would watch these or write about these, you know, or whatever. Yeah, they were...
They were considered import trash.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, which is, you know, but now we get to reevaluate them and realize how brilliant and kind of fun and great they are.
So now you can read all the, you know, reviews now on like Rotten Tomatoes and things.
Yeah.
All right. My last bit of Tenvin information. You want to hit it?
Hit me. Yeah.
So we all know we talked about Quentin Tarantino making Django Unchained, obviously, right? Quentin Tarantino has said that before he enters into a relationship with a girl, he always shows her Rio Bravo, and if she doesn't like it, There is no relationship. That is my closing.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're about done. But
I mean, no, it's really funny how we both choose these movies as like, oh, this would be good and this would be good. And then somehow we find something that sort of ties them together.
And in this case, it's Tarantino's fanboyism for both of them, really.
Yeah.
I think that they definitely work well together as like a call and response or like a yin and a yang.
Right.
I think they're both good in their own ways. They both show two different sides of a very diverse genre, which is the Western.
Right.
I really enjoyed these, Ryan. I'm glad we watched them. I'm glad you liked them.
Yeah.
I recommend people watch more Westerns, which will lead me into my recommendations for.
As our video store clerk, what if we like these movies and want more of them? What would you suggest?
Okay, well, I'm going to go more modern for my first one. It's not a Western, but it's a movie that was very much inspired by Rio Bravo.
Yeah,
John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah,
made in the 70s. It was basically a modern day remake of Rio Bravo.
Yeah.
It's basically a siege in a prison. You've got police and bystanders trapped in a prison with a criminal where his gang is trying to bust them out, and they basically have to fight off the gang. It's a more modern retelling, basically, of Rio Bravo. It's a very cool movie. It's fun. It's John Carpenter, so it's very well shot. It's got a great score. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, we didn't talk a lot about the influence of Rio Bravo. But yes, there's even a sci-fi movie. There's like the same sort of plot.
Oh yeah, that plot has been reused so many times, and I think it was never used better as far as like a remake or like a rehash than John Carpenter's original Assault on Precinct 13.
All right.
A great film. So my second recommendation to continue the Western theme, I'm going to recommend another movie called The Great Silence.
Okay,
super cool Western. I think you should watch it.
Okay,
it's about a mute. Gunslinger looking for a man who wronged him, played by the great German actor Klaus Kinski. It's a wonderful movie set in the wintertime.
Okay.
So it's very different than other Westerns visually.
Okay.
Because there's snow everywhere. Okay. So imagine the same kind of iconic like cinematography like Django, but set during like these beautiful snow-capped mountains.
Oh.
And the hero never talks.
Mm-hmm.
And the villain is just this wonderful manic performance from this great like German actor Klaus Kinski, who just seems utterly unhinged throughout the entire film. It's beautifully shot. It's got great action, and it takes some really unexpected turns. Mm-hmm. And it's a movie that's really forgotten about by people nowadays, but it's so good. Again, that's The Great Silence.
Is this a spaghetti Western?
It is very much a spaghetti Western.
Okay, all right. So you can expect more of the grittier tone,
yes,
more violent nature.
It is not a happy film.
Okay, all right.
But it is excellent.
I see. Okay, and if you want to watch more of. I guess we already talked about like The Searchers, and there's also Django Unchained, and that sort of thing.
And I just want to clarify, that's called The Grand Silence. I think I said The Great Silence.
The Grand Silence?
Yeah, I think I said The Great Silence before. The name is The Grand Silence.
So The Grand Silence, if you want to go for a spaghetti westerns,
or if you want to go siege movie,
go with John Carpenter's
Assault on Precinct 13.
Assault on Precinct 13. I'm writing this down.
That's a great title, right?
Yeah.
Assault on Precinct 13.
Precinct 13.
What a title just grabs you by the neck, You're like, it sounds just like it's just going to be exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that just about wraps it up here for video culture. I think, Esri and I are going to go to, there's a restaurant, Mexican restaurant in town.
That sounds good, man.
Called Rio Bravo. I think that's where we ought to go for
it. Sounds
dinner.
Good. It sounds good. As long as we don't get trapped there.
Yeah.
And that's my last bad joke for the evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. It's I'll be here next week or 2 weeks from now.
All right. Well, you guys take care until next week.
I'm Matthew Esri.
And I'm Ryan Acri.
Go watch some movies, guys.
Have you always been alone? forever.